This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who tucks Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Talamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Jock Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, retired jockey Christina McManigal. We are in studio in Lexington, Kentucky, and ready to roll for the next hour. And Christina, here we go. Episode number 5 of this brand new program here on the network, and it has been such an unbelievable journey so far, and heck, we're just getting started.
I can't believe you just said episode 5. It's flown by. Just the hour, it just goes by so quickly.
Yeah, it really does. And so many people now tuning in coast to coast and worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. We have a lot of people going back and listening to the podcast. We've received so many great emails from you, so much feedback on our social media, and people telling us how much they're enjoying these programs. And you can see why. When you start with guests like Mike Smith and with Chris McCarron and John Velasquez and then Shane Sellers last week, there's a reason people would want to tune in to hear these stories.
Definitely. I'm glad they're enjoying it because I certainly enjoy talking to these great jockeys. I mean, it's...
You and I talked about this last week. Sometimes we sit here and we do the interviews, and sometimes we become so mesmerized by the stories of our guests that it's hard to really focus on asking questions because, let's face it, we're just fans.
Exactly. I know. We were talking to Shane, and all of a sudden I realized, oh, no, I'm supposed to ask a question. I was so into what he was telling me, you know?
I have a feeling it's going to be a wild ride tonight as well
as we sit down for the full
hour with the 43-year-old native of Farmers Branch, Texas, who has accumulated more than 3,000 career victories. As a matter of fact, that number to date sitting at 3,174. The career purse earnings of our guest tonight, more than $42 million. He is veteran jockey Clinton Potts, and he is with us now here on Jock Talk on HRRN. Clinton, thanks so much for taking the time.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you on board and really excited to hear your story here tonight. And, you know, look, when you look back on your career and growing up in that small town in Texas, could you ever imagine that we'd be sitting here talking about 3,174 career victories?
Absolutely not. And, you know, when I did first decide to delve into horse racing, I never thought that it would turn out that I would be good at it. I knew it was something I just delved into when I got out of high school. My parents had gotten a divorce, and there was no money for me to go to college. So I just figured I would gallop horses and ride some races and make some money and put my way through college if I could. And you know, it turned out within the first few months of riding, I'd won quite a few races and moved my tack to Maryland as an apprentice. And, you know, the story is told from there.
What do you remember about the first time you ever sat on a horse?
I was in diapers and my sister would lead me around.
Really?
Yeah, it was in Rockwall, Texas. I was probably 2 at best, and I have a picture of it, as a matter of fact, and it was the first time I was ever on a horse.
What did your family think of your decision to ride?
I think probably there was a lot of mixed, you know, opinions about it. I don't think that they thought it was something that I was going to go through with when I first started into it. Of course, you know, my mother has always been my biggest fan and was on my side and, you know, willing to help out any way she could. But I don't think my dad ever thought that I would pursue it fully like I did. But, you know, myself included, I didn't think I would either at the time because I didn't ever think I would be good at it. I had a a job all through high school breaking and training riding horses. I broke horses for people in the Dallas County Sheriff's Posse, the Black Horse Patrol, and the Shrine Circus. And I broke horses for play days, for roping, for you name it. And that was my job just the summer before my freshman year in high school.
So you started riding at Blue Ribbon Downs in Sallisaw, Oklahoma. Tell us about that track and how long it took you to really take to the saddle.
Well, I mean, I grew up in Texas, so it didn't take me long to take to the saddle. But I actually rode up a lot of races before I ever went to Blue Ribbon Downs, because in Texas there were a lot of brush tracks around, you know, just basically scratched up surfaces in the dirt surrounded by a barbed wire fence and a two-horse starting gate that were not recognized. And I rode quite a few there before going to Blue Ribbon Downs. And to me at that time, I had never been around a racetrack, a real racetrack. So going to Blue Ribbon Downs, that was the big time to me, you know, it's 17, 18 years old. And I was very, very green, didn't know much about race riding at all. But I started with quarter horses, so I didn't have to know a lot about race riding. Just hang on and guide them straight, right?
Yeah.
But that to me, I thought was probably, you know, one of the most exciting times in my life when I got to go there, because that was something I never thought that I would accomplish.
You know, Clinton, last week we had Shane Sellers on this program, and he was talking about riding at the Busch Tracks in Louisiana, and he said that that really did make them tough, and that's what really catapulted so many of those great Cajun riders that we see in the sport today. Kind of the same thing with the tracks you were riding on and competing against, well, I guess in non-sanctioned competition. Did that help toughen you up a little bit?
Oh, yeah, well, definitely. I mean, you would see things happen on those tracks you'd never see anywhere else.
What's your favorite memory from those tracks?
Not staying alive, I think. There was a lot of times that I thought I wasn't going to. I had horses run right through 5-strand barbed wire fence, and you know, they would give those horses all kinds of crazy stuff. They didn't even know they had legs back then, and, you were liable to be on any kind of horse at any time, and you never knew what it was. And when you're young, you have no fear. You'll step up there and do it. But I have a lot of memories of people and horses and things at that time of my life and that first stage of my career. I could go through a lot. The best thing was that the gentleman who, you know, taught me how to break and train and work with these riding horses in these drills and things like this, the Dallas County Sheriff's Posse and the Black Horse Patrol. The biggest thrill for me was him getting to see me develop into a jockey and him getting to see, you know, his education, you know, given to me, pan out in my horsemanship starting at those early years.
Do you remember your first winner?
Actually, on a recognized track, I don't remember what my first winner was.
That's amazing. So many trainers won't remember that either, Clinton, because they're just so focused in the moment and everything they've accomplished in their career. They don't even remember that first one.
Well, like I said, I'd ridden so many brush track races and stuff. To me, my first win at a recognized racetrack wasn't really my first win. So
yep.
I don't even remember the horse that I won on.
How old were you when you went to Blue Ribbon?
I was 17 years old.
Wow. What was that like as a young, fearless kid walking into that jocks room for the first time?
Oh, to me, that was big time. You know, I'd never been around a racetrack. And I might as well have been walking into, Santa Anita Park at that time. I didn't know what a racetrack was about. And it was very scary, I guess, in a way, because everything was new. But very, very exciting. And I was very, very much into it.
Who gave you your first big break when you got there?
I was riding quarter horses. Well, when I went to Blue Ribbon Downs, I went there with the gentleman that I was training horses for in Texas. And I went there to ride those horses for them that I was training. When I got there, I met a man named Larry Gibbs. He was a quarter horse trainer, and he said, listen, if you want to become a jockey, your best bet is to come to the racetrack and learn how to be a jockey. And he said, if you want to come up here, I'll give you a job. You can, you know, gallop horses for me, and we race. At that time, it was Ross Meadows in Ada, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
They raced on Saturdays. So once a week they raced, but they raced at Blue Ribbon Downs, I don't know, 3 or 4 days a week. So I did. You know, I was out of high school, and like I said before, I wanted to try to formulate a way to pay for myself some college. And I went there and went to work for him, and I was riding his quarter horses, and I was riding horses for other people. But the big break came when I had two people sit down with me and say, listen, you know, we see you riding those quarter horses. We've got a barn full of thoroughbreds, both of us. There's two different gentlemen. And they said, you know, you can ride everything we have, but you got to get away from those quarter horses and that trainer that you're working for. And so I did. I went to work for these two gentlemen. And in the first 3 weeks of riding for them, just riding on Saturday and Sunday at Blue Ribbon Downs, I won 8 races.
Wow.
In those first 3 weekends.
Wow.
Which catapulted me into a better position. I had some people that had some contacts in Maryland. They said, look, you want to be a thoroughbred jockey, you need to come to Maryland. That's where they make apprentices. And, you know, a lot of good jockeys have been made in Maryland. So, you know, my stint in Blue Ribbon Downs is like a blink of an eye, really. I went in there and then, you know, got the opportunity to go to Maryland, where I had Jimbo Grishaly had retired and was very helpful to me as far as learning race riding skills, because I had none when I went there. I'd ridden quarter horses and stuff, and I hadn't been around that many thoroughbreds.
Yeah.
Or thoroughbred racing, and he helped me out. He set me down in 45 minutes time, told me more about the makeup of a race and times and saving ground and the difference in dirt and turf. He told me more in 45 minutes that I could have learned in 10 years on my own.
Wow.
And I was riding at the time first call for Stuart Mitchell when I first came to Maryland. And, you know, he was a force at that time. He was, you know, already in the stage of being unhealthy and having to sit in a wheelchair and stuff like that. But he had a very good stable, and I won a lot of races, did very well with my apprenticeship. You know, which moved on into being able to ride for everybody else there. And, you know, I rode at least a few for everybody.
So in the year 2000, Clinton, you were ranked second nationally by wins, and you were still in Maryland at that time. Was that correct?
No, I was not. I was at
Penn National. But yeah. Your experience in Maryland, how long did that last?
I was there about 9 months. I'd already started my apprenticeship in Blue Ribbon Downs, and when I got there, I was approaching the last couple of months of my apprenticeship, and everybody was saying, yeah, when you lose your apprenticeship, you're going to be dead for a year. It happens to everybody, and you're going to struggle. And you know, I kind of took those words to heart and thought, well, I could go somewhere else and ride and not struggle and do well. And I got I had an opportunity to go to Northern California to ride the fair circuit. So I went out there with 1 month left on my bug, on my apprenticeship, and started riding in the fairs out there, and I did really well.
I ended up
ninth leading rider overall that year on the fair circuit in Northern California.
Yeah, I mean, being, as you said, kind of a country boy from Texas, you couldn't have been too thrilled with the Baltimore, Maryland lifestyle, right? That big city life?
To be honest with you, I hated it.
Yeah.
Coming fresh out of small town Texas and small town Oklahoma, into Baltimore, it was a huge culture shock for me at that time. And I didn't know how to adjust to it. And I was there all by myself. I had no family, no friends, nothing there. I just, you know, came there, sliding in on my coattails. And, but yeah, it was there only for a short amount of time, 9 months, and I was ready to get out of there.
How'd you like Northern California?
It was a different experience. I was thinking I was going to go there and it would be, a whole different thing, but it was still horse racing. And one thing I've learned in my life, if I've not learned anything else, wherever you go, there you are. Nothing changes. And it's not going to be some kind of spectacular life somewhere else because it's somewhere else. And, you know, it was just moving back into another area of doing the same thing I was doing.
What eventually brought you back to the East Coast, Clinton?
Charlie Castrinzi was a trainer that I rode for when I rode in Maryland. And in the time that I went out to Northern California and was riding out there, he moved a stable to the National. And he had been calling me on many different occasions, and he said, listen, come out here. I've got a whole barn full of horses. You can ride everything I've got. You know, they're Maryland horses. I'm getting other Maryland horses from people that ship in here, and these horses win at Penn National. And he said, you can come here and take off. He said, I need a good rider. He didn't believe that, you know, he was getting a fair shake from the riders that he was riding. And, I kept turning him down. I said, no, I'm doing well here in Northern California. I want to see how it goes. And finally, he made me an offer I couldn't refuse. He said, you come here. I will put you up in a hotel for the first 2 weeks you're here. I'll pay all your expenses. And if you like it and you think you want to stay, I'll find you a place to stay and I'll help you out, with your first month's rent there. And if you don't like it at that point, you can always go back and I will pay your expenses. And I said, well, you can't really go wrong there.
Yeah.
And, me being the small town country boy coming out here to Penn National, as you saw the setting that this place is in, I expected to come out here and be here for a month or two and go back to Northern California and continue on. And it took me 10 years to get out of here. Before I came here, because I liked it here so much. Mm-hmm. The harshness of the winters is the only thing that it's. I don't think you ever get used to it. It took a lot of conforming to.
No, Clinton. I remember the way I met you was coming up to Penn National as a young bug girl and freezing and in the middle of January. It's 10 degrees and. But I always had so much respect for you. You helped out the younger riders a lot. And tell us about the jockey colony at Penn National. Seems to be pretty close. And, you guys all working hard. And you're kind of the working man's jockey. You kind of took the road less traveled to success. And, you put your time and effort into it.
Well, I have. I've always been one to help the younger riders, though, because when I was in Maryland, none of the riders that were riding would help you. Mm-hmm. They said, well, if we help you and you start to do good, you'll take my business away, so I can't really help you. Where, I had Jimbo Brashali there to help me out was huge and taught me so many things. And I've always given back that. I've never, ever denied a young rider who wanted to learn any of my knowledge as far as that goes. But I went around the country and rode in Delaware for about 5 years and rode in Florida for a couple of winters and ended up breaking my neck in Delaware, going out to California to recuperate with Dr. Caton, who they named the horse after Dr. Caton. He worked with Lafitte Pincai when he broke his neck, and he also worked with, I can't remember his name now. The guy that got run over by the horse.
Oh, Jeff. Lucas's
son.
Lucas, Jeff. Yeah, Jeff Lucas.
Jeff Lucas, yes. Yeah. He worked with him, and he actually owned some racehorses, and he knew about, you know, what it takes to be a jockey. And the hospital there in Christiana, right by Delaware Park, where I broke my neck, were not going to sign a release for me to ride again, stating that I would have to find a get a professional opinion from someone else that signed a release, because if I got hurt again and was paralyzed, that I could sue them. So I, you know, got in contact with Dr. Kate, and he said, sure, come on out, and, you know, we'll check you out and see what we can do. And I went out there to recuperate with him. While I was out there staying there, I went to the track and met people, and they're like, hey, you should, you know, when you start back up, you should try and start here. And so I did, and I did really well out there. For the 4 years that I rode there, I was in the standings in almost every one of the meets that I rode, including the two-week fair meet they have there at Fairplex.
Hey, Clinton, I have to ask you, you talk about the broken neck, and I know you spent, 14 and a half weeks in a halo. You were unable to move your neck. What on earth makes you even want to come back to riding after something like that?
Well, it's something that you love to do. I mean, it's something that over the years, and, you know, I've really come to really love to do. I love to ride horses, and I love to communicate with them, and I love to get on horses that other people don't communicate well with, and make a difference on those kinds of horses. And basically, all said and done, without a college education, there's not much more that a jockey can do and make the kind of money that you can make riding horses. You know, you're going to settle for a more menial job no matter what you do other than riding those horses. So financially, and also, you know, as an athlete and as a horseman, it's something that when you're away from it for a period of time, a short period of time, you can say, oh, I'm not going to miss that. But you do. You start to miss it. And then you start watching races, and it's in your blood, and you get to a point where you just can't wait to get back out there and do it again. And even knowing the risks involved, it's better to live a short life doing something you love than a long life doing something that you hate. Mm-hmm. I think that's the way that I looked at it. It's something I love to do, and, you know, if it costs me years on my life, so be it. I've done something I've loved to do.
Well, you had many of those cases of coming back from injuries, and you had a really unlucky injury, not on the back of a horse. Tell us about that a little bit.
Oh, that was crazy. I was going down a bad path at that time. I was drinking way too much, and it's one of the things that led me spiraling back down to landing back at Penn National, and I climbed up in a tree to get a cat down that had gone up in a tree. It was my girlfriend's cat, and it was a house cat, and I didn't want to leave it outside. And I climbed up in this tree to get this cat down like a dummy, and I fell out of the tree. I fell about 30 feet. I made all kinds of injuries to myself. I ruptured my spleen, injured my liver, my kidneys, broke my right hip, my pelvis. I dislocated and broke my right wrist. And, it's crazy that, you know, you fall out of a tree and almost die when you ride racehorses for a living. But I was within minutes of my life by the time I got to the hospital. The surgeon that did the surgery on me woke me the next morning, the next day, and said to me, you know, if you didn't get here when you got here, you would have bled to death internally.
Wow. And you didn't even wait for the EMTs to get there, right? After you fell?
Well, no. See, this is the mentality of I don't know, athletes in general, I think, but jockeys, you know, you don't think you can get hurt. And, you know, I fell out of that tree, and my girlfriend at the time said to me, you know, I'm going to call 911. I'm going to have an ambulance come and get me. I said, no, give me 10 minutes. I'll be fine. it's crazy, but it's what I said. And like I said, I had been drinking that day. It was Easter Sunday, and I had some friends over, and I'd cooked, and there was alcohol on board. And I'm, you know, pretty hard-headed when it comes to that. But, you know, she dusted me off and made me change clothes, put me in the car, and drove me to the hospital herself. In she didn't do that, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you guys today.
Wow. Jockey Clinton Potts.
They said, I ruptured my spleen inside completely, but I did so much other damage. I was bleeding so heavily internally that I would have bled to death internally.
Jockey Clinton Potts on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Just amazing. You talk about Clinton having 9 lives. You've used a few of those already, my friend, but glad that you are here to visit with us here tonight.
Well, that makes 3 of us, I guess.
And, of course, that came shortly after you had been on top of the mountain. You mentioned you kind of hit that low point of drinking a little bit, and then before that, you were on top of the mountain winning your 3,000th career race. That was on March 8th, 2011. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about that day, and we'll talk about some of those memorable moments you've had in that storied career of yours. We'll do that next here on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stay with us. Part 2 coming up next.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word JOCKEY to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Find out why HRRN is good for your wallet on the ExpressBet Weekend Stakes Preview.
This is very lucrative.
Our expert handicappers will break down the weekend's biggest races in detail and give you their ExpressBet of the day.
Big money! Big money.
The ExpressBet Weekend Stakes Preview. Fridays, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 220 and XM 206. Or streaming live at horseracingradio.net. Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Brisnet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Brisnet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 220 and XM 206, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net. Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
And we're going to kick things off with trainer Graham Motion, Hall of Fame trainer Phil Mott here on Trainer Talk. Roger Atfield is going to be with us for the next half an hour. Carl Nasker, an honor to have him on the show tonight. Hall of Fame trainer Shug McGahey, nice enough to spend some time with us. I want to welcome Hall of Famer Bob Baffert to the program.
Trainer Talk, the biggest names in horse racing. Wednesdays, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 220 and XM 206. And always streaming live at horseracingradio.net. If it happens in horse racing, it happens on HRRN.
But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby!
What a memorable Breeders' Cup Classic! It's a race for the ages!
Here's the wire, and it's a photo finish that goes to Tonelin!
Wise Dan gets his head in front! The first $1 million race in Keeneland history!
Racing's biggest events are right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And Taurus is at the quarter pole with a 3-length lead. Misbehavior, better get going and do it quickly. She's still second. Sweet Whiskey is in third. Thank you, Mary Lou. Grandstand side, running toward fourth, but a long way from the lead of Taurus. Final furlong of the Lexus Raven run, and Taurus has an 8-length lead past the 16th pole. Back to Sweet Whiskey. Thank you, Mary Lou. Taurus demolishing the field for Clinton Potts. What an impressive run for Taurus. It was Sweet Whiskey home second. Thank you, Mary Lou. Came from last to be third. 1 minute 21 and 1/5 seconds.
Mike Penna, Christina McManigal, back with you on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Enjoying our visit with veteran jockey Clinton Potts here this evening. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast of this show and all of our programming is available at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. For the latest updates on everything in thoroughbred racing, you can follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And Clinton, when we left off the first half of the program, we were talking about that incident where you had slipped and fell out of the tree trying to rescue your girlfriend's cat, and that was in 2011. And you mentioned being at a low point with all of the drinking and all the things you were going through in your personal life. This was a little bit of a wake-up call for you, and then that led you to kind of get back on the path of recovery, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it did. And being resilient, as I spoke about before, and hard-headed, and it took me a little longer probably than what it should have, but I did in 2012, like a year and 2 months after that falling out of the tree incident. I went into a 30-day program to get all the, you know, all the drinking and the issues washed out of my life. And it was probably the best thing that I've done, and I wish I would have done it sooner, although I didn't. I have done it now, and it's been over 2.5 years. I've been out. I have my life back in order. I have my business, you know, booming back again. And, you know, life is better now than what it has ever been because of that.
So Clinton, you told us earlier that you went to Penn National, and then after 10 years, you left. So tell us where you went after your brief time in Penn.
Well, when I first left here, I'd actually recuperating from one of my injuries. Scott Lake, who was a leading trainer in the country at the time, and this would have been in 2001. No, actually 2002. I was recuperating from an injury, and he called me. He said, look, I've got a string of horses at Delaware Park. I need you to come there and ride first call for me. You know, you can ride everything, no questions asked. But I need you to be there by the opening day. And I said, I will be ready. And I did. I got myself ready, got myself in shape. I think I rode 2 races here at Penn and then went to Delaware and rode there, not only for Scott Lake, but for everyone else there for 5 years, and ended up the last 2 years, 2004, 2005, the winter of 2003, 2004, the winter of 04, 05, I rode down in Florida at Gulfstream Park, which mm-hmm. was, you know, even a larger step up than Delaware Park. And, you know, had a lot of good things going my way. I did really well at those winter meets down there, winning 25 races each year that I was there, which was, you know, pretty good for, you know, small-town guy. Mm-hmm. And it opened up more doors for me, and then I broke my neck in August of 2005.
Wow.
And that's when, you know, I had to go out to California to recuperate with Dr. Caden, to get a release to ride again. That's when I resumed riding in California. It was in the winter of 05-06. I went back to Florida and rode, started there, got myself in shape, had an agent lined up when I came back to California and started my career out there, where I rode there for 4 years.
Clinton, you know, this is a sport, we hear it all the time. It has the highest highs and it has the lowest lows. And you've experienced both of those ends of the spectrum. When you get down to the bottom, like you've alluded to a couple of times, what is it that brings you back?
Determination. You just have to, you know, you have to get in touch in a place within yourself and say, you know, what is it that I want? Am I going to sit here and just let life go on by, or am I going to make my life the way that I want it to be? And although it's not so easy to climb out of that hole as it is to fall into it, it's determination and and, you know, self-regard to get you back out of that hole.
Were there times that you doubted that you would get out of that hole?
There were times when it was tough and times when I wanted just to walk away from it and go into another avenue of life. But those weren't strong enough to pull me away. I wanted to do it, and I wanted to do it bad enough. And if you want something bad enough, you'll do anything it takes to get it. And I did, and I have. And I crawled my way back out of that hole. And it's scratching over the surface now and coming back as strong as ever. And I feel better now than I've probably ever felt in my life as far as being physically fit and healthy. It was definitely well worth the effort and worth sticking, you know, to my guns to get there.
Talking with jockey Clinton Potts on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And Clinton, that determination obviously paid off. And not too long ago, you celebrated your 3,000th win. You currently have 3,174 wins. But tell us about that memorable milestone and how that had to mean so much, all that you've been through.
It was. I mean, to win 3,000 races alone is a huge accomplishment. But to be back here and do it on a horse that I really enjoyed riding, and to do it for someone I had ridden for over 20 years, Todd Beatty, and to have him a part of that and everybody else involved was just, it was surreal to have it happen that way.
And you mentioned Todd Beatty, and you've ridden for him, like you said, 20 years, and I find it funny that in September of 2008, you won the Grade 1 Vosburgh Stakes at Belmont aboard Black 17, and that horse took you to incredible things and places, and it's funny that Todd Beatty ran second in that race, and then you end up riding for Todd quite frequently now.
Yeah, it's a small world, world of horse racing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Black 17 was probably one of the best. Well, no, it's not probably, but he was one of the best horses I've ever ridden. And, you know, he took me on to get to take a trip to Dubai and ride him in a World Cup race there. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he injured himself in that race and only finished fifth, but I thought he was good enough to win it. And mm-hmm. I was also riding that same year Philly, who was entitled the Queen of Speed before her career ended, and in River's Prayer. And I won not only the Vosburgh that year, but also won the Prince's Rooney on her down in Florida, also winning on Black 17 the same day as the Prince's Rooney at Calder. It was a Grade 2, I believe, that I won on Black 17.
Yeah, the carry back.
Definitely. Two of the best horses I've ever ridden.
Wow. Yeah, we were there that day, Clinton. That was one of our, when we were first getting started with the network, that was our first trip down to Calder. And I can remember doing the coverage of those races, and it was a unbelievable day for you, not just with Black 17 and the carry back, but then to come back with River's Prayer and take the Princess Rooney. That had to be one of the most memorable days in your entire career. Am I right?
I don't think my feet touched the ground for at least 2 months after that. Really don't. It was just a phenomenal thing for me. And, you know, it was great for me to be riding in California with some of the best riders in the country and riding, you know, on some of the best horses in the country, and to fly into Calder and just sweep the two best races on the card that day. I was absolutely elated, and I was very thankful and, you know, very much giving back to those who took me there. And probably one of the best days I've ever had in my whole career.
Does your agent's phone start ringing off the hook a little bit more after winning a Grade 1?
Oh, I'm sure it did. And at the time, when I won those Grade 1 stakes, I was riding in California. And it definitely, you know, opened up some more doors for me out there. And also, as well as people shipping horses out there for the stakes.
So, Clinton, tell us, looking back, who would you say out of those great race horses that you've ridden, who would you say is your favorite?
My favorite is not one of the greatest racehorses that I've ridden. It is a horse that I rode here over a period of about 6 years. His name was Malcolm F., and I won 21 races on the horse.
Wow.
The trainer, each year he would get a second slower. He would go, he went 108 and changed as an 8-year-old, 109 and changed as a 9-year-old. He ran until he was 12 years old.
Wow.
He won 30-something career races. I'm not sure exactly how many, and I won 21 of them. And when the trainer retired him, he gave him to me, and I had him as a riding horse until the day that he died.
Wow.
So that's my favorite horse of all time. As far as winning on those good horses, I can't say that I have a favorite. They're all special to me. When you get the opportunity to ride those kinds of horses, you know, I don't think there's anything that sets them apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, horses are like people. They all have different personalities, and you know, you adjust to each one, but I don't really have a favorite when it comes to that. They're all great to me.
How about the day you won your very first graded stakes? I guess it was in the Lafayette, probably right here at Keeneland, right? Was that at Keeneland? Yeah, with More Smoke? Yes.
It was with More Smoke, and
yeah.
He was doing really well. I had won several stakes out on the East Coast. He was in training down at Gulfstream Park when I was riding there that winter, and I believe the Lafayette was one of the prep races for the Derby at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of horses that were in that race that were shooting for that Triple Crown setup, and in winning that by 11 3/4 lengths as my first graded stake, was something very, very special to me. And it was special because I won it for John Zimmerman. And the late John Zimmerman.
Yeah.
You know, who passed away, I think, on the following year, or maybe it was 2 years after that.
Tell us about your return to Keeneland as a victor with Taurus this past October.
Oh, that was awesome. That was absolutely awesome. I mean, what a great horse she is.
Mm-hmm.
It was upsetting to learn of her injury with her new connections out in California in her return race, her first race for them. But I think by far that is probably the fastest horse I've ever ridden in my life. I mean, she was just amazingly, amazingly talented horse. And to come there on that track, I know it was a new track record that day, but it was a new track record over the new surface.
Yep.
Which doesn't mean that much, but it's not what she did. It's how she did what she did that was so special. She did it with such ease that day and beat some really nice horses by a very long margin.
Exactly. Exactly. I think it was, what was it, 9 lengths?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Hey, what's that like when you're in front by 9 and you know you're not getting caught? You can't hear any hoofbeats behind you, I would imagine. What's that like for a jockey?
Well, I can remember, you know, crossing the wire on it. I remember when I turned for home and threw the reins at her and she just exploded. I knew that I was going to win that race. Didn't know by how far. But when I crossed the wire and I knew how far I was in front, it's just a second in time where it's like winning the lottery. You don't know how to, you know, act. If somebody hands you a winning lottery ticket, here you just won, you know, $2 million or whatever it might be. And for that 1 second, you don't even think about anything. It's just, this just didn't happen to me. And in reality, it did. And that was the kind of feeling that I had when I crossed the wire on her. I knew all along that she was a really, really good horse, but we had never really set her to task. You know, in the races that she won, she'd do them very easily. It was just glorified workouts with the competition she ran against. And running against those kinds of horses that she was in that day, and the way that she did that like that, was the first time I'd actually ask her to give what she had to give. And knowing that was there all the time and then seeing it happen was a very special thing.
Jockey Clinton Potts on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Clinton, let's go back just a little bit to a horse we talked about a few moments ago, and that's Black 17, because not only did you win the Vosburgh at Belmont with him, He took you to the Breeders' Cup Sprint at Santa Anita. He took you to the Dubai Golden Shaheen in the desert. I want to focus on that for a moment. What was it like for a country boy from Texas showing up in Dubai?
Well, I'll tell you what it was like. They give you two tickets whenever you get to go over there. The Sheikhs are very good to us in doing that. And they pay your way over there, and you get to ride, you know, the really nice airline to go over there. And I could take one person with me. And what one person in the world would I take besides my mom? So I called my mom up. I said, Mom, I got two tickets. I can take one other person, and I can't think of anybody else I would rather take than you. So I got to take my mom to Dubai with me.
Wow.
Two small town people from Texas. And that was something that was very, very special to me to be able to give to her.
What did she think of the experience?
We had a great time over there. I mean, when you go there, they treat you like royalty, like absolute royalty. And it's just something that not a lot of people ever get to experience. And I think both of us, after spending the time over there that we did and experiencing the experience we had there and coming back home, it took a while for it to really set in what had just happened to us, what we just went through. And we were both in agreement on the same thing that, wow, that's just something that will probably never happen again. And it's like, you know, living a few days of a dream to be able to get to go compete in a place like that with the kind of people that were there.
Kind of different from Texas. But and what you described there and what you've described about the feeling when you're winning aboard Taurus and going and experiencing those things, that's why we do it and for that rush and the love, like you said. But not only have you had obstacles with your injuries, but also we're both tall and I'm sure the weight wasn't always easy. And tell us about that. How do you work with that?
I struggled with my weight most of my career, a lot of it due to drinking too much beer and that sort of thing, which is a lot easier now because I don't do that.
I know that feeling well, Clinton, by the way.
Yes. I mean, it's makes it hard. You make it hard on yourself when you do that. It's easier now, but I've come across, it's over a year and a half ago, I come across this machine called the Kangen Water Machine. You hook it up to your spigot. It goes in through a pre-filter, and it goes over these seven titanium plates. It raises the pH to 9.5, puts oxygen, antioxidants, anti-inflammatories into the water. It also condenses the molecule of the water so that it's readily available to your body. It takes 30 to 60 seconds to hydrate your brain when you drink this water. Since I've gotten on this machine, I have wished that I could have had it back when I had the bug. It has made keeping my weight down so much easier. I've tried everything. I mean, you name it. If it was out there to try, I tried it. I did the diet pills. I did the heaving. I did, you know, all the things to try to find the easiest thing. And I just wish that I could have known about this, you know, 10 years ago when it first came into our country. It's a really, really amazing thing. And I can't say enough about it. But the not drinking has changed that as well, too. As you get older, it gets harder to keep your weight down because your metabolism slows down. And, you know, I'm 5'5", and I've got pretty good musculoskeletal structure, and keeping the weight down is a full job in itself, especially in the wintertime.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be very difficult up there in that neck of the woods up in the Pennsylvania area. Clinton, what if you were to pick out you're putting together a resume tape, and you were to pick out a couple of your career highlight moments that you would want on that tape, what are those moments going to be?
Oh, I would think if I were going to put a resume out there, I would have a DVD of the races that I rode on Rivers Prayer and a Black 17 and getting to see, you know, the best horses that I rode and in the way that I handled those kinds of horses, to put out there to say that, hey, I can ride a good horse. I make a living riding cheap horses day to day, day in and day out, and week to week, but put me on the back of something phenomenal and I can do a phenomenal job.
Yeah, I've had a lot of veteran riders tell me that riding today isn't quite the same as it was back in the day. What's different about riding races now as opposed to when you first started?
Well, it's the same problem that everybody has, not just jockeys, but trainers and owners and everything else. It's the shortage of horses. There's more riders out there now, it seems, than there are horses at times. and those opportunities are just fewer and fewer. There's a whole array of how things have changed in the sport, because it's changed so much. And to say, as far as riding goes, is different. It's because the opportunities are less than what it used to be.
So if you were not a jockey, Clinton, what would you have done?
No idea.
No idea.
Tell you the truth. my dad was a fireman, and you know, growing up, I always thought that I wanted to be a fireman just like my dad did. But horses are the only job I've ever had. Yeah. Starting out with the riding horses and stuff like that, I have never gotten paid to do anything but ride a horse.
Yeah.
No. Not to say what I could do. I'm sure that I could be good at a lot of things. I'm no dummy by any means.
No.
I think that if I set my mind to do something, I would be able to do whatever I wanted to do, right, given the opportunity to do it.
Exactly. And you mentioned that it's funny to me to think now, because I always noticed when I rode with you that you're so good at getting a horse out of the gate. And so it makes sense that you rode quarter horses in the beginning of your career. And so, given a choice, if you could choose, would you prefer a speed horse or would you prefer a horse that comes from behind and off the pace?
I'd just choose a horse that can run.
There you go.
Great answer. Great answer. Clinton, who's the best rider that you've ever ridden with?
Edgar Prado.
Really? How come?
He was my mentor. He rode with me when I had the bug in Maryland, and I used to watch this guy ride horses when I was young. And you know, a lot of riders coming to the 16th pole 70 yards from the wire, you know, when they're done and they're beat. This guy could throw across and do things and get a fifth run out of a horse. I mean, he's just amazing. And even still today, he's still a great rider and a perfect gentleman too, as well. Someone to definitely be a mentor for you. He's a very classy person, as well as an excellent, excellent rider.
Yeah, I don't think you'd find anybody that could say a negative word about Edgar Prado. Do you remember the first time you actually beat him in a race?
Oh, boy, no. I don't remember the time, but you know, I was riding with him in every race all the time. At that time, you know, Edgar was the king of Maryland, and he was pretty much in every race all the time. So, you know, I couldn't pinpoint the first time I ever beat him in a race.
You know, you talked about him being a mentor for you, and we started this interview talking about how you love helping young riders, and you've never been afraid to share your knowledge with them. What advice do you give to a young rider that comes up to you and says, hey, Clinton, I want to do this. What do I need to do?
Well, there's a whole whole array of things that you could say to them, and everyone's different. I would say, well, let me watch you ride for a couple of days and let me see what's going on. And if it's in their riding that I can help them, or in their, you know, production, the way that they're working, their PR work, stuff like that. It's whatever suits that particular person. It's different for everybody.
Right, and some people don't realize is that you don't just ride horses. You also have to almost be a politician or a salesman in the mornings, going out and selling yourself. And sometimes that doesn't come naturally to some people. And you know, you're always a very personable person, and for younger riders to learn how to do that, that has to be a big help. Definitely.
In that case, you know, and you saying that, a lot of times what I will tell young riders, it's not what you do on the back of the horse that is the most important. It's the 2 minutes before you get on and the 2 minutes after you get off that make all the difference in what you say and how you conduct yourself.
Mm-hmm. Clinton, I know you've accomplished so much, but I'm sure there's still things that you would want to accomplish in this sport. What's still left on the Clinton Potts bucket list?
Well, that's been something I've been mulling around here with over the past 6 or 8 months. Do I want to stay here at Penn National and end my career here, or do I want to go somewhere else again and get another try at it? I'm certainly not, in my mind, at the end of my career. I think I have quite a few years left to ride. And although I like living here and I don't like living in the city and I don't like driving through traffic and all that stuff, I think I owe it to myself to go out and get another shot. I'm not sure where that would be right now, as the way, you know, horse racing is, and, you know, it's such a lull. It's kind of hard to go anywhere because it's tough everywhere you go with the lack of horses and the lack of opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know, you know, what that's going to entail. In answering that question for you, but I would certainly like to, at some point in the near future, go out and get another chance, whether it be go back to Maryland and ride there, or go back to California and, you know, give it another Cub Scout try,
yeah.
whether it's going to work or whether it's not, just to go and see for myself.
You know, Kentucky's a good place, too.
Yeah, Kentucky works.
Kentucky, you know, yeah. This business is about opportunity, and it's where you get the best opportunity. That's where you go. Mm-hmm. One thing I've learned is in this business, you can never say never. Like, I would never go there to ride, or I would never come back here to ride, or, you know, because it's all about opportunity. You take the best ones that you have.
Yeah, you never know where that road is going to take you, and your road has taken you so many different directions throughout your career, and can't wait to see what the future holds for Clinton Potts. Clinton, only about 2.5 minutes left here in the program, but I always like to kind of wrap things up by asking our guests what it is they like to do when they get away from racing. What other hobbies or interests do you have?
Well, I've had quite a few over the years. I used to love to go hunting and fishing. A lot. I've kind of gotten away from that. My big thing now is I love to go backpacking. The Appalachian Trail runs right through the state of Pennsylvania. I've section hiked a lot of it. I did a lot of backpacking and hiking when I was out in California. Some beautiful, beautiful country out there to hike through. And I like to cook as well. And I have friends over, and I'm told I'm a pretty good cook.
What's your specialty?
I don't really have a specialty. I can make anything you want. And my specialty is taking a recipe and vamping it the way that I want it and making it better than you know, what the recipe says or what that you're going to get in a restaurant. Yeah. And I'm good at that.
He's Jockey Clinton Potts. He's good at an awful lot of things, including riding horses. More than 3,000 wins to his credit, and a credit to the game as well. Clinton, can't thank you enough for spending a little time with Christina and I tonight. It's been a delight to hear your story, and all the best moving forward. Look forward to catching up with you up the road.
I really appreciate your time, Mike and Christina. And thank you very much.
All right, Clinton Potts here on Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Boy, what an amazing story. You told me you knew Clinton from riding with him up there in the Northeast.
I told you.
You said, hey, we have to get Clinton on the program because his stories are incredible. And I feel like we just scratched the surface.
So we did. We did. We could do 3 more shows with him, I think.
Yeah, just absolutely amazing and so much fun to hear everything that he's been through, everything he's had to overcome. Mm-hmm. That hour and some of his stories was a lesson in perseverance.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. Never give up. And he didn't. And he's going strong.
Well, that's what makes all great athletes great. And Clinton right up there with the best of them now. And all the best to him moving forward. We're back next Tuesday evening, 6 to 7 Eastern. Make sure you join us here on Jock Talk. Of course, tomorrow night, Wednesday night, our Trainer Talk Show presented by Fasig Tipton. Thursday night's the Call-In Show, and Friday night's our Stakes Preview. Been fun.
Oh, yeah. Always fun.
All right, for Lee Delapina, our producer, and for Christina McManigal, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening.